Good morning, everyone. I'm Leslie Liljenberg, Chair of the Board. Today is March 28, 2025, and the time is 9 a.m. I now call to order this meeting of the Board of Directors of the Surplus Line Stamping Office of Texas. This meeting is being held in person at the Surplus Line Stamping Office of Texas, 1601 East Pflugerville Parkway, Suite 3301, Pflugerville, Texas, 78660. Written notice of this meeting, the proposed agenda, and all related meeting materials were provided to the Texas Department of Insurance Deputy Commissioner, Financial Regulation Division, and her designees on March 17, 2025, in accordance with the Surplus Line Stamping Office of Texas Plan of Operation, Section 2C2. Written notice of this meeting and the related agenda were submitted to the Office of the Secretary of State and published on March 20, 2025. Publication in the Texas Register in accordance with the Texas Open Meetings Act. All board members were notified of this meeting on March 12, 2025. Conference call-in number was provided to members of the public in the public meeting notice. I will now call the roll to confirm which board members are participating in today's meeting. Jeff Klein, Vice Chair of the Board.
Present by teams. Good morning.
Nick Lawrence.
Here.
See Peter. Okay. Ezekiel Nassau.
Present.
Leah Bennett. Present. Ryan Bridges. Present. Jim Bishop. Present. From a five or more members is present to Texas Government Code Section 551-125B2 and Plan of Operations Section 2C6. The following stamping office management staff, council, consultants, and liaisons are present. Please affirm your attendance for the record when I call your name. Greg Brandon, Executive Director.
Present.
Donna Ogg, Director of Finance.
Present.
Ronnie Ford, Director of Finance.
Present.
Diane Herrera, Director of Operations.
Present via teams.
Denise Amasia, Director of HR. Present. Shalonda Stone, Director of IT.
Present.
Rhea Musalam.
Present.
Alex Bohan.
Present.
Saying that right? Bohun. Michael Norrid and Jeff McWirt, General Counsel.
Here.
And Paul Rainey, TSLA Lead. Denise, will you please identify the additional stamping office staff members participating via Teams?
We have Marisa Gomez, Ariel Rosario, Belton Moore, Casper Robos, Christian Porter, Portia Jefferson, Robin Porter, Ruben Olivares, Toby Pick, and Tyler Perdol.
Thank you.
We also have Christian Robinson as well.
Oh, Christian.
Snuck in again.
Are there any liaisons or consultants attending?
I don't answer you. I do. David Dodd for TDI.
Okay. But you might be down here a little bit further. There you are. Are any representatives of the Texas Department of Insurance and Texas Comptroller or Legislative Offices attending in person or by?
David Dodd.
Thank you, David. That's Office of Financial Counsel and Andrew Guerrera. Thank you. Now, at this time, we have the introduction of the new board members. On January 14th, 2025, Commissioner Brown appointed Mr. Ryan Bridges to the Surplus Line Stamping Office Board of Directors as a public member, whose term will expire on December 31st, 2027. Next, also on January 14th, 2025, Commissioner Brown appointed Ms. Leah Bennett to the Surplus Line Stamping Office Board of Directors as an industry member, whose term will expire on December 31st, 2027. Last but not least, on January 12th, 2025, Commissioner Brown appointed Mr. Jim Bishop to the Surplus Line Stamping Office Board of Directors as an industry member whose term will expire on December 31st, 2027. With these new appointments, we continue to have a full board. For new board members, I'd like to give each of you a chance to introduce yourself. And Ms. Bennett, with you.
Hi, I'm Leah Bennett, and 30 years in the insurance industry, currently with Copeland Group, based in Longview, and we're excited to be here.
Glad to have you. Mr. Bridges, I yield the floor to you to introduce yourself if you'd like.
Hi, good morning, everyone. Ryan Bridges. I'm in insurance risk management with CenterPoint Energy. I've been in the risk management side of the industry for about 6 years. And then prior to that, worked in various roles in the insurance side, PR Insurance. And I'm happy to be here and happy to meet everyone.
And finally, Mr. Bishop, I yield the floor to you to introduce yourself.
Thank you. Jim Bishop. I'm actually with Bridge Specialty Group. I'm based in Dallas, actually in Plano. I've been in the industry for, I hate to say it, but 40 years. Mm. So I guess I'm the old one in the room.
Jeff.
Yep, Jeff. Forgot Jeff, sorry.
Thank you, everyone. We welcome each of you to the board and appreciate your willingness to serve. Before we get started, I have a few housekeeping item reminders. Antitrust activity or discussion are prohibited at all stamping office functions. This prohibition includes the exchange of information concerning individual company rates, coverages, market practices, claim settlement practices, expenses, or any other competitive aspect of an individual's company. We will not have a public comment section. Public and media attendees listening by phone should mute their lines at all times. Representatives of state agencies and members of the public are welcome to observe or record this board meeting. Please refrain from asking questions or interjecting comments during the board's deliberations. The state agency personnel present may be asked questions about their agency's policies if those questions relate to an agenda item. Members, counsel, and staff should identify themselves by full name when speaking. Please mute your microphone and telephone when not speaking. So we're going to have a discussion appropriate approval of the December 13 minutes. Everyone was provided a copy of the December 13, 2024 meeting minutes. Are there any corrections? Discussion. There being no further discussion, do we have a motion to approve the December 13, 2024?
Do you want to follow makes a motion?
Have a second, Jeff, please.
I'll second, Jeff.
Any further discussion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, say no. Please have it, and the motion passes. Now we will have a discussion of appropriate actions, finance and audit committee report and related items. I now open the floor to Mr. Ezekiel McCall, chair of the finance and audit committee, joined by Mrs. Donna Ogg, director of finance, and others to present this agenda item.
Thank you, Leslie. The finance and audit committee, consisting of myself and Nick Lawrence, met yesterday, March 27th at 3:45 p.m. We heard presentations and, where appropriate, voted affirmatively on the recommendations that will be presented to this board related to the 2024 annual financial audit, the 2025 finance year-to-date update, reserve balance analysis, annual review of the stamping office investment and cash management policy, and the annual stamping fee analysis. At this time, I'll turn it over to Donna Ogg, Director of Finance, to present sub-items A and B under this agenda, item 3.
Good morning, everyone. So before I present Marie, I will read from the plan of operation why we are doing this. Sections 2C, 5C, the first regular meeting of the board in the calendar years designated as the annual meeting, during which the board must review the operating expenses, schedule of fees, and annual report for submission to the department's deputy commissioner of the Financial Regulation Division or the deputy commissioner's designee. And Section 2B5 states the board must provide for an annual independent audit of the books and records of the stamping office, and the auditors must report directly to the board. So this is fulfilling that obligation. And I present Marie Musalem now to present our audit.
Thank you, Anna. Good morning, everyone. This is Marie Musalem speaking from Calhoun Thompson and Mazza, the audit firm. You should have received two documents issued by my firm. I believe it's in the packet: the audit wrap-up letter and the audited financial statements. The audit wrap-up letter on the screen too. Page 1, the status of our audit. We have completed our audit. Our audit was conducted in accordance with auditing standards generally accepted in the USA as required. Our opinion, dated March 3rd, 2025, was unmodified. This type of clean opinion. All records and information that we would see were freely available. Management and other company personnel provided full cooperation. On page 2, the results of the audits, accounting policies and estimates. There were no changes in significant accounting policies and practices during the year. although management did not make any significant changes to the process or significant assumptions used to develop significant accounting estimates in 24. Corrected and uncorrected misstatements. There were three corrected misstatements as a result of the audits. The first one was recurring, like every year we have this adjustment to reclassify securities maturing in greater than 1 year on December 31 as a long-term investment. $19 million, but this reclass does not have any effect on the P&L or the income statement, simply a balance sheet entry. The second entry to record the future fund activity at your end for about $300,000. So a recurring entry that we have every year. The third entry for $88,000 was to reclassify current portion of the lease liability at your end. There were no uncorrected misstatements as the audit. On page four, internal controls over financial reporting.
Maybe we just had Pete join, so we need to acknowledge that he is now.
So we need the record to show that Pete Harrison has joined the meeting at this time. Pete, are you there?
Yes, good morning.
Good morning. Glad to see you. Thank you. Marie, you can continue.
Thank you. Presentation. On page four of the wrap-up packet, controls over financial reporting. Planning and performing our audit, we consider the company's internal control of financial reporting as a basis for designing our audit procedures, but not for the purpose of expressing an opinion on the effectiveness of internal control. There are three categories of deficiencies that can be noted during an audit. Control deficiencies. A deficiency in internal control exists when the design or operations of a control does not allow management or employees in the normal course of performing their assigned function to prevent or detect and correct misstatements on a timely basis. Significant deficiency is a deficiency or combination of deficiencies in internal control that is less severe than a material weakness, yet important enough to merit attention by those charged with governance. Material weakness, a deficiency or combination of deficiencies in internal control such that there is a reasonable possibility that a material misstatement of the company's financial statements will not be prevented or detected and corrected on a timely basis. During the audit, we did not identify any material weaknesses. Page five, prior communications to those charged with governance. There were no significant changes to the planned audit strategy or significant risks initially identified and previously communicated. There were no disagreements with management during the audit. There are not aware of any instances where management consulted with other independent accountants during the year. We did not note any instances of fraud during the audit. We encountered no difficulties during the audit. Thanks again, Donna. We requested and received a representation letter from management. Management has provided or will provide to you. There were no other issues arising from the audit that we consider significant and relevant to those charged with governance. On page seven, independence communications, our engagement letter dated September 29, 2024, describes our responsibilities in accordance with professional standards and certain regulatory authorities with regard to independence. This letter also stipulates the responsibilities of the company with respect to independence as agreed to by the company. Please refer to that letter for information. We've already discussed the three audit adjustments, so I was not going to go over the financial statement in the audit report. You've already seen these numbers, so unless someone has a question, that concludes my presentation.
Is there any questions or further discussion on this item? So do you have a recommendation for a board motion at this time?
Yes, I recommend that the board accept the 2024 annual financial audit review as presented and submit a copy of it to TDI in accordance with sections 2B5 and 2C5C of the Stamping Office of Operation.
Thank you. Is there a motion for the board to accept it? There is a motion for the board to accept the 2024 audited annual financial report and submit a copy of it to TDI.
Do I have a motion on the floor?
So moved.
Second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All in favor say no. The ayes have it and the motion passes. Thank you both. Moving on to the next sub item is the 2025 finance year to date update. And Ms. Fogg.
So I apologize, what you're looking at in your booklet, anything printed or received prior to yesterday, I had inadvertently attached the wrong month to this. So what I'm going to present and what is on the screen is the correct. I had attached February of 24. So, had the wrong year there for a second. So we are presenting February's results and then year to date, which is would be 2 months worth. So for February, the stamping fees were over budget 7% or $31,300 for February, and over budget 17% or $165,600 year to date. Investment income was over budget 6% or $6,500 for February, and over budget 5%. $11,500 for the year, which means our investments earn more money than we had projected. Total operating expenses were under budget for February, $101,500 or 14%, and under for year to date, $61,700, which is 4%. Salaries and benefits were under budget 17% or $68,900 for the month, and just about flat for year to date at 1% or $16,800. So very good projections, Denise. Professional services were under budget by 14% or $8,600 for February due to the timing of some legal and audit invoices versus where we had placed them in the budget. We were over budget 5% or $5,440 year to date due to a new training video invoice from Lemon Light being paid in full in January, where the budget presents it being spread out over the 12 months. Conference and education were under budget 39% or $1,600 for February and 76% $8,500 year to date due to the timing of budgeted conferences. Travel and entertainment were under budget for the same reason as conference and education, under budget by 39% or $432 and 68% or $3,800 for the year. Occupancy and operating expenses were under budget $16,600 or 36% for the month, and under $23,500 or 29% for the year. And the subcategories that cause these underages, a word, under? were software maintenance and computer equipment that Shalonda didn't need or got better deals on than the budget, as she does. She is the deal queen. General and administrative expenses were under budget $1,900 or 1%, so pretty flat for February, and under budget $6,200 or 2% year to date. Contingency expense, which we're required to present in our annual budget, we never use it, but it's there. That resulted in $3,500 savings for February, and year to date, a savings of $8,400. So we had $4,600 in operating income for February and a $222,000 loss year to date. We had budgeted for a loss in February of $134,800 and a loss of year to date through February of $461,000. Change in investment value was an increase of approximately $120,700 for February, and an increase of $61,750 year to date. Any questions on that? Move on to our unrestricted undesignated fund balance for February. And we'll go into how we got some of the numbers on our next slide. But our beginning fund balance going into the year was, or into February, was $32,205,985. And our year-to-date loss of $160,245 brought our fund balance at the end of February just over $32 million. And so that brings us to, as of the end of February, $17,542,000 in excess what our maximum is this year. Any questions? Okay, that concludes my financial presentation.
Is there any discussion or questions for Ms. Ogg regarding the 2025 finance year-to-date? Ms. Ogg, do you have a recommendation regarding the 2025 finance year-to-date update?
I do not.
Will you please continue, Ms. Ogg, with the reserve balance update?
So per our plan of operations, Section 2B7A, the budget must take into account unknown and unanticipated expenses as may reasonably occur and make provision for such expenses under prudent business practice. Projected reserves, except for funds for asset replacement, must not exceed 2 times the average of audited operating expenses for the 5-year period immediately preceding the budget year. And B, if the reserve balance is projected to exceed the limit under subsection B7A of this section in the upcoming year, within 30 days after the annual meeting, the board must submit a written plan for reducing the amount of the actual reserves within a reasonable time, given the then existing market conditions, to the department's deputy commissioner of the Financial Regulation Division or the deputy commissioner's designee. So here we have the maximum fund balance calculations. You see on the operating expenses, the 5 preceding years. Those are all audited numbers. And so that brings us to the far right, 5 years of operating expenses of over $32 million. The average then becomes the $7,251,000. And 2 times that 5-year average brings us to $14,503,577. So that is our new maximum for the year 2025. So we ended the year, the audited numbers at the end of 24, with the fund balance being $32,205,985. So we started the year with an excess of $17,702,408. Questions on that? That concludes that portion.
Thank you very much. There are no other questions or further discussion on this item. Ms. Ogg, do you have a recommendation for a board motion at this time regarding the stamping office reserve balance review that you have presented?
Yes. Consistent with this presentation, I recommend that the board submit a written plan to TDI to continue the current adopted plan for reducing the amount of the actual reserves of the Stamping Office in accordance with Section 2B7B of the Stamping Office Plan of Operation.
For a motion that the board submit a written plan to TDI for reducing the amount of the actual reserves Stamping Office in accordance with Section 2B7B. Of the Stamping Office Plan of Operation and consistent with the presentation today.
Donathal makes a motion.
May I have a second, please?
McLaurin, second.
Thank you. All in favor, say aye.
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 All opposed, no. The ayes have it and the motion passes. Thank you, Donna and Ronnie. Now moving on to the next sub item, investment and cash management policy annual review. Donna, do you have that presentation as well?
I start it and then I pass it over. So here is a copy of our current investment and cash management policy that was put in place in June of 2017. And this is Exhibit A, which goes into further detail. And Alex will talk about this too, but two of our main objectives are preservation of capital and an adequate rate of return. And then also sufficient liquidity when and if we do need money from our investments. We haven't yet, but we need to be able to have liquidity for that. There's restrictions on our portfolio, what we are allowed. You can go down one more slide, please. To invest in, and also it's just more details if anyone's really interested in that. And then down one more. Yep, there we go. So then we also have ranges, minimums and maximums with a target of the different types of investments that this plan has set out for us. So those are guidelines that Alex uses when he suggests ways to reinvest our funds. And then it goes on to the next slide, please. What the requirements are for our investment manager, the responsibilities. I won't read. So now I'm going to turn it over to Alex Bahoon, who is our Frost brokerage representative.
There we go. Yeah, I appreciate y'all having me here, and thank you for allowing us to help you. I'm going to, excuse me, touch on the investment objectives just real quick. Excuse me. And what we do in your portfolio to make sure that we can hit those investment objectives. So as far as the first investment objective goes, to manage the investments with the goal of preservation of capital, 76% of the portfolio is invested in assets that are either FDIC insured or backed by the full faith and credit of the United States government. So we use that to demonstrate that preservation of capital is always top of mind. The goal is to not lose the organization any money. To satisfy objective number two, buying CDs and also treasuries, it requires us to invest the funds for a period of time. That being said, in order to make sure that sufficient liquidity is always had, we employ a laddering strategy. Therefore, we have things maturing every single month. So as we'll see in just a couple slides, we have billions of dollars maturing every single month. So if an expense does come up, we are able to adequately plan and provide the liquidity to the organization from the reserve portfolio. And then number three, to achieve an adequate return to support the organization's operations. Currently, in the interest rate climate we're in today, the portfolio does pump off a significant amount of cash flow to help the organization. That's not always been the case, but at the moment, the very conservative portfolio objective we have is providing the organization with a significant amount of cash flow on a monthly basis. Going down just to touch on the acceptable portfolio of investments in the current allocation of the portfolio. So it's just the next one down. On the bottom there, acceptable portfolio investments. We do look at the ranges provided. Currently, 60% of the portfolio is in certificates of deposit. Another 40% is in fixed income securities. We don't have any equities in the portfolio at the moment. With the way interest rates are, the portfolio earns plenty to satisfy the needs of the organization. And equities do carry inherent investment risk, which includes the potential loss of principal invested, which kind of goes against the very first objective of the policy, which is capital preservation. So the equities are not included in the current portfolio at the moment. Scrolling down just a little bit to our slides, as far as the investment restrictions go, everything in the portfolio is invested in publicly traded investments. All of the investments are U.S. dollar denominated. No voting securities or corporations are owned. No more than 10% of the portfolio is invested in one corporation, and no more than 25% of the portfolio is invested in any one industry at cost. Again, The current investment listings includes certificates of deposit, U.S. Treasury bills and Treasury notes. We do own some corporate fixed income through direct securities, and then also some corporate fixed income is owned through open-ended mutual funds. We touched on this, but the current portfolio weightings is 60% in CDs, and 40% of the remaining is in a variety of different fixed income products. Touching on kind of the current cash flow and objective of the portfolio, number three and number two really is to provide a liquidity and also an adequate return. So if you just go down to the next slide, this is just our expected interest payments over the next 12 months. So the top is 2025 and some of 2026 estimated interest. And as you can see, with the increased interest rate environment we're in today, the organization is going to have $1.3 million of interest earned over the next 12 months. I touched on our technique of laddering these fixed income securities in order to provide monthly liquidity. As you can see on the bottom, if we look at principal and interest, so that's interest payments plus maturing principal expected, we have over $12 million of the portfolio maturing within the next 12 months. So if the organization needed any sort of liquidity injection, we can certainly provide that through the current investment schedule, maturity schedule. And the last thing I'll touch on is just kind of forward-looking guidance on how we handle the portfolio reinvestments. We're mainly investing in things that are based off the current interest rates, fixed investments that provide a downside guarantee. The Federal Reserve really controls that rate. And as everybody has seen in the news lately, it's kind of up for debate where interest rates are going. If you asked anybody, last year we would have expected more rate cuts. At Frost, our current economists believe there will be two rate cuts towards the end of the year. But I just put these headlines in there to show there's a lot of discussion and a lot of volatility around the issue. Highlighting kind of the last two headlines in February, Forbes had an article saying that inflation was too hot and we probably won't have any rate cuts. The next month, the exact same author for the exact same publication posted a story that says easing inflation will lead to Fed cuts. So who knows where rates are going to go? And another kind of advantage of laddering the portfolio is we're able to kind of reduce timing risk as much as possible. We're always consistently buying the same duration of security. Therefore, if rates go up, because we have so much of our principal maturing every single month, we're able to reinvest into the higher rates. If rates go down, we do have a lot of the portfolio locked in for several years to come. So employing a laddering tactic or strategy kind of helps us make sure that the portfolio is in good hands regardless of where interest rates go. That's really all I have.
Are there any questions or discussion for Mrs. Aug regarding the annual review of the investment and management policy? Do you have a recommendation regarding the annual review of the investment and cash management?
Yes. Consistent with this review, I recommend that the board make no revisions to the Stamping Office investment and cash management policy in accordance with Section 2B6 of the Stamping Office Plan of Operation.
Do I have a motion that the board make no revisions to the Stamping Office Investment and Cash Management Policy in accordance with Section 2B6 of the Stamping Office Plan of Operation?
This is Pete Harrison. I'll make that motion.
Thank you, Pete. May I have a second, please?
Yeah, Bennett.
Second. All in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed, no. All opposed, say no. The ayes have it, and the motion passes. Thank you both, Alex and Colin.
Hey, Pete, can I just give you a reminder that we need your video on for votes and things like that?
I apologize. I thought I was on. I apologize.
There you go. Yeah, thank you. You can turn it off for the discussions, but for the actual vote, we have to be able to see and hear both you and Jeff. So thank you.
Well, I confirm I made the motion.
Thank you.
Are we good? We good then? We don't need to redo that? Okay. Thank you very much. Moving on to the last sub item under agenda item 3, Cheyenne Herrera, Director of Operation, and Christian Robinson, Senior Data Analyst, will present the annual stamping fee analysis.
Hey everyone, before Christian gets into his analysis, I'd like to provide you a little bit of information about his background. Christian began working at the stamping office in 2017 as a policy analyst. He also worked as a financial analyst before being promoted to a data analyst in 2019. Christian was promoted to a senior data analyst earlier this year, and he has a background in mathematics and analytics with a bachelor's in economics and mathematics from UT Austin. He is currently in his last semester from Georgia Tech, finalizing his master's in analytics. He owns all things data and analytics for the stamping office and handles most internal and external data requests, including the graphical representation as well as visual representation of that data. He also works on automation for many of our manual processes and is also responsible for developing technical requirements and or implementing database changes within the smart development cycle. And with that, I will turn it over to Christian.
Well, thank you, Cheyenne. And good morning, everyone. As Cheyenne said, my name is Christian Robinson, and I am the senior data analyst at SLTX. And I'm sure as you could tell by my title, there's going to be a lot of math in this presentation, unfortunately, but I also have pretty pictures. So there's a little bit of something for everyone. Today, I'll be walking you through an analysis of our current stamping fee rate and how it relates to the reserve fund balance. Currently, the reserve balance exceeds the maximum threshold as outlined in the plan of operation by about $18 million. And at this board meeting 2 years ago, the board voted to recommend to the insurance commissioner that the stamping fee rate be reduced to 0.04% with the goal of reducing those reserves. The key question, both then and now, is how can SLTX effectively reduce those reserves while maintaining operational stability? While the stamping fee rate plays a critical role in that strategy, income from investments and expenses also warrant discussion. Therefore, I will address each component and how they impact the reserve balance, both historically and in the future. So finally, considering current market factors and our future outlook, I'll present my recommendations for the stamping fee rate for your consideration. Now, the plan of operation necessitates the discussion of the stamping fee rate by instructing the board to recommend to the insurance commissioner a stamping fee rate as measured by premium to be charged in all surplus lines filings submitted to the stamping office. Further, the recommendation must be submitted within 30 days of the annual meeting and must include whether the recommendation is to raise the fee, to lower the fee, or to take no action. But as for the undesignated fund balance, the plan of operation, at least as it's currently written, defines the maximum reserve balance to be 2 times the average audited operational expenses over the last 5 years. But should this reserve balance exceed the maximum, the board must submit a written plan for reducing those reserves within reasonable time, which considers existing market conditions. Now, before I begin the actual analysis, it's important to see a current snapshot of the state of the fund balance. And I do just want to make a couple of notes on this slide. First of all, these were unaudited when I made the slide, but now as of 30 minutes ago, audited. Also that last, the bottom right corner where it says the difference as of the end of last year, that should reflect 17.7 million instead of 17.8. At the end of last year, the reserve balance successfully decreased from 32.7 million to 32.2 million. And the difference between the actual balance and the maximum is 17.7 million. Therefore, in the first year with the new 0.04% stamping fee rate, the difference was successfully reduced by $2.5 million. While there's certainly a long way to go, the decrease shows that the decision made 2 years ago to lower the stamping fee rate is beginning to have an impact. Now, to assess market conditions and their impact on the reserve balance, we need to focus on the three levers that determine our ability to manage reserves effectively. So I'll touch on investment income and expenses at the end, giving a historical and a future perspective for each. But first, I'll dive into the stamping fee revenue, which is the primary way that we collect funds. I'll give a historical and geographic perspective for the stamping fee rate. I'll provide a break-even analysis, and then I'll provide an outlook for future revenue given recent market conditions. Now, the current slide shows every stamping fee rate and the history of the stamping office. So one thing to note is that on average, the stamping fee rate has changed every 3.6 years, with the most recent change being effective 1-1 of last year. The longest period SLTX has gone without a rate change was the 10-year period from 2007 to 2016, when the stamping fee rate was 0.06%. And in 2017, the rate was increased to 0.15% with the intent of covering costs related to what became the SMART project. And then after that project scope change, and at the same time, the surplus lines market in Texas entered a hard market with large premium increases year over year, the stamping fee rate was cut in half to 0.075% in 2021, and then again to 0.04% last year. Not only is the current stamping fee rate the lowest in Texas stamping office history, but it's also currently tied with Illinois and Minnesota for the lowest rate nationwide. But while Texas is tied for the lowest rate in the country, keep in mind that states don't compete on fees and each has its own unique market conditions and statutes that govern their operations. By knowing where we stand provides perspective as we evaluate our next steps. Some other notable states of similar size to Texas are Florida with a 0.06% rate, New York with a 0.15% rate, and California with a 0.18% rate. Now, hypothetically, if our objective were to maintain our reserve balance at similar levels year over year, our goal would be to charge the break-even rate, given reported premiums, expenses, and the income that we receive from investments. However, as we've stated throughout this presentation, our goal is to reduce those reserves, and the current 0.04% rate allows us to do so by undercutting the break-even rate.
Christian,
Go ahead.
Oh, before you go to the next slide, this is Jeff Klein, the vice chair. I just had a question what the realized rate is and how that's different from the stamping fee rate when I read the materials. I'm sorry.
Oh, absolutely. I'm glad you provided that segue because that's exactly what I was going to do.
Sorry.
You're great. Note that even though the 0.04% rate became effective 1-1 of last year, that the realized rate over that period was 0.045%. Now, just to touch on the realized rate, the difference between the realized rate and the actual stamping fee rate is that the realized rate is simply the total stamping fees processed during a year divided by total premiums. The reason that differs from the actual stamping fee rate is because stamping fee rates are charged on when a policy is effective, not when it's filed to our office. So if a policy is effective 1-1 of 2021 and it's filed to our office in July of 2024, it still has the old 0.05% stamping fee rate. And typically we've seen historically, which this was true last year as well, that whenever there's a stamping fee rate change, it takes about 3 to 6 months for at least 90% of the transactions to have the new stamping fee rate. So much of the premium that was reported in the first half of last year had the old 0.075% rate instead of the new 0.04% rate. And this means that the full impact of the lower rate will only start to fully be realized this year.
Thank you.
Now, implicit in the directive from the plan of operation to consider market conditions when determining an appropriate stamping fee rate is the importance of considering how those conditions impact our future outlook. Of course, projections are never going to be 100% accurate. So it's important to continually update and evaluate the future outlook as conditions change. Looking back at the projections provided last year for 2024, you can see that even though premiums did continue to increase significantly, the resulting increase was not unexpected. Overall, the average monthly stamping fee revenue in 2024 was about $5,000 above what was projected. So this just provides credence to the projections that were provided to the board last year. As for the next 10 years, as long as current trends hold, we currently still project the fund balance to reach the maximum in the 2030s. Now, the green line on the chart shown represents the projected fund balance, while the dashed orange line represents the projected maximum. Each projection includes updated stamping fee revenue projections, as well as it assumes a 7% annual growth in expenses year over year, and a 4% annual turn on any assets that are, or any investments that are matured and then reinvested. I'll go into more detail on how the fund balance is impacted by different growth rates later in this presentation. But these projections reinforce that reducing reserves is a long-term proposition that requires continual monitoring of every factor to ensure that the current trajectory continues. Now, moving to investment income, first we see a historical overview for how income from investments has grown over the last 10 years. So until 2022, investment income was a relatively immaterial portion of revenue, reaching $500,000 at its peak. However, investment income has grown a lot in the last 2 years, totaling $1.3 million last year. Now, the major contributing factors to that increase are the recent interest rate environment since 2022, as well as the volume of invested assets due to the excess reserves. Now that investment income has grown to a level that warrants consideration, it's important to also consider the impact on future reserves. Now, our representative from Frost, Alex, was very gracious and worked really hard to give us projections for our investment income over the next 5 years, which you see in the middle column there. So that those projections assumed a 4% return on any assets that are matured within the next 5 years and then reinvested. As the current interest rate environment is particularly unpredictable, it's important to also consider how different scenarios would impact the reserve. So the table shown reflects how, as well as the 4% return on reinvestments that Frost was able to provide us, how a 3% return and a 5% return on reinvested assets impact reserves by the end of 2029. Additionally, so that the focus is strictly on investment income here, the stamping fee projections and growth rate on expenses are held constant here. So it includes our current stamping fee revenue projections over the next 5 years, as well as assuming a 7% growth rate in expenses. Now, the chart on this slide is simply a visual representation of the same data we saw on the last slide. Here, the middle line represents the baseline projection provided by Frost, while the upper and the lower bounds reflect a more optimistic and a conservative return scenario. As you can see, even modest shifts in investment can result in differences in the reserve balance trajectory. And moving to expenses, we again see an overview of how expenses have grown over the last 10 years. But since expenses impact reserves as well as the maximum, they are vital to the goal of reducing reserves. As you can see, expenses were relatively flat from 2014 to 2020, with a notable increase in the last 5 years, predominantly due to an increase in investment into employee-related assets. I see an impact of expenses on the reduction of reserves. I've outlined three scenarios which assume growth rates ranging from 3% to 10%. Now, as expected, the difference in growth rates for expenses results in greater variation in outcomes than we saw with investment income. So if expenses grow 3% over the next 5 years, assuming all other trends hold, the fund balance would be $16.9 million above the maximum. On the other extreme, a 10% annual growth rate in expenses would result in a $2.1 million difference by the end of 2029. For reference, expenses have increased on average 7.7% year over year since 2001, which is the earliest data that I was able to obtain. Now, once again, I've provided a visual representation of the same data for our visual people. So the top line represents the difference between reserves and the maximum with a 3% growth rate year over year, which remains, as you can tell, relatively stagnant over the next 5 years. However, a 7% growth rate in expenses, which is fairly consistent with historical precedent, allows reserves to successfully approach the maximum by an additional $10 million. This demonstrates that holding expenses to historical growth rates may allow us to reduce reserves at a sustainable pace, while slow growth inhibits the reduction of reserves. Now, in summary, SLTX has made progress toward reducing the reserve fund balance since the decision to lower the stamping fee rate to 0.04% took effect. The $2.5 million reduction in the first year demonstrates that our strategy is beginning to yield results. As we've seen throughout this analysis, the stamping fee rate is just one of three major levers, including investment income and operating expenses, that together shape the financial trajectory. While market conditions remain dynamic, our current projections indicate that the reserve balance will continue to approach the maximum threshold in the 2030s. Given that 2025 is the first full year that we will see a full impact of the reduced stamping fee rate, and that projections in 2024 align closely with actuals, my recommendation at this time is to take no action on the stamping fee rate. This will provide a period of stability while we continue to observe how recent changes influence the long-term outlook. It is important to also that if premiums continue to grow 15 to 25% year over year, as they have the last couple of years, it could reverse the progress that we have made in reducing reserves despite the lower rate. So this reinforces why we must continually monitor revenue trends and remain ready to take action if reserve growth continues to accelerate. We will remain diligent in monitoring and will revisit the rate as needed in response to significant shifts in premium, expenses, or income from investments. Thank you for your time and your consideration.
Thank you, Christian. Are there any questions or further discussion on this item? Questions? So is there a recommendation for a board motion at this time?
Yes. Consistent with the presentation, I recommend that the board recommend to TDI that no action be taken to change the current stamping fee rate in accordance with Section 2B7C of the Stamping Office Plan of Operation.
Thank you. Do I have a motion that the board recommend to TDI that no change be made to the current stamping fee rate in accordance with Section 2B7C of the Stamping Office Plan of Operation?
Nick Lawrence, I'll make a motion.
D. Gonthal, I'll second.
Thank you. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. The ayes have it, and the motion passes. And thank you all, and thank you, the Financial and Audit Committee report items. We'll now move to agenda item number 4, discussion and appropriate action of the annual review of the plan of operation and proposed amendments. Under Section 2C5B of the Stamping Office Plan of Operation, the board is required to review the plan of operation and propose amendments, if any, during the annual meeting. At this time, I'll open the floor to Mr. Jeff Klein, Acting Chair of the Plan of Operations Committee, to present this agenda item.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I apologize for not being there today due to extensive travel, 8 of the last 9 days, including the NAIC, and I had the pleasure of seeing the Deputy Commissioner there. And I look forward to meeting our new TDI friends at the next meeting, and congratulations to our new board members. I'm a government affairs attorney, but an attorney nonetheless, and as Jeff and Michael note, we absolutely love plans of operations, so I'm pleased to provide this report. In background, Section 2C5B of the Stamping Office Plan of Operation requires that the board review the plan at its annual meeting and propose any amendments. And this is an ongoing process, so I will describe what has transpired. In 2001, the Plan of Operation Committee conducted a thorough review of the Plan of Operation and recommended numerous plan amendments, This board considered the recommendations and ultimately approved and forwarded those recommendations to the Texas Department of Insurance for consideration. Consequently, Greg Brandon, former General Counsel Stan Strickland, and former board member and I believe Chair Penny Chambers met and discussed the recommended amendments with TDI staff. We received guidance back from TDI and focused our discussions with them on a subset, a smaller set of the recommended amendments intended to address situations that directly affected the operations of the stamping office. In 2022, 2023, and again in 2024, this board reviewed and voted to make no additional recommendations and allow the prior plan of operation recommendations to stand. Those recommended amendments have not changed since then. And I will note additionally, both Executive Director Greg Brandon and Stan Strickland met with TDI on April 2nd, 2024, reviewed the entire document and all the proposed amendments, which we had discussed with TDI staff. Prior to this particular meeting, the board members received a copy of the standing recommended plan amendments. They were included in your materials for the board orientation meeting yesterday and are included in the materials again today for this meeting to provide you with the opportunity to review. Considering this fact pattern and the multiple prior board reviews of these recommended amendments and the meetings and consultation with TDI staff, I recommend that this board allow the prior recommendations to stand, make no additional changes or recommendations for amendments to the plan of operation at this time, and to continue ongoing discussions with TDI staff concerning the recommended amendments presently under consideration and any additional amendments that the TDI may itself propose. That concludes my presentation. Madam Chair?
Thank you, Jeff. Are there any questions or further discussion on this item? Is there a motion for the board at this time?
Yes, this is Jeff. I move that the board vote to allow its prior amendment recommendations to TDI to stand, make no additional recommendations at this time for amendments to the plan of operation, and continue discussions with TDI concerning the recommended amendments presently under consideration or any additional amendments that the TDI may propose to us.
Stands is our first. Then I need a second.
Jim Bishop, I'll second.
Second.
Any further discussion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. The ayes have it and the motion passes. And thank you, Jeff, for your hard work on that. Item is agenda item number 5, operations director report and appropriate action. And at this time we have Cheyenne Herrera, director of operations, to present the operations director report.
Thanks so much. All right, perfect. Thanks, Marissa. I'll start off with an update on the operations team, right? I sound kind of like a broken record on this a little bit, but performance remains outstanding for the entire team. It'll be a sad day when I have to report that that's not true, but once again, it is true. That's the entire team, including the 3 new policy analysts that were hired in July. The team's overall accuracy continues to exceed expectations, with most months reflecting an accuracy in the high 98 or 99% range, and even some months with the 100% accuracy rate. As a reminder, our minimum required accuracy for metricized transactional entry is 97%. The team continues to grow within their current job duties, and overall focus on practice makes progress and progress makes perfect, with a layered and hands-on training approach for both new and existing team members. As far as statutorily required deliverables, we continue to generate and deliver monthly and quarterly reports to TDI, which include monthly late filing reports, the listing of policies written through ineligible insurers, which remain outstanding after 60 days. This is part of our insurer analysis task and is a result of the evaluation of each insurance contract and insurer, and as well as kind and class reports. Additionally, the annual policy count report data for 224 out of 305 eligible surplus lines insurers was reported to TDI ahead of the March 1st deadline. The remaining 79 insurers chose to self-report. As a reminder, the annual policy count report, which is used to report policy count data to TDI in response to their standing data call for complaint ratio calculation by insurer. SLTX reports this data as a courtesy for all surplus lines insurers. However, if the insurer also reports data to TDI, TDI disregards the stamping office reporting. The 2024 annual late filing report was generated on March 17th, so just last week. We had 458 out of 982 agencies that had one or more late filing report with one or more late filings with only 1.43% of all policies being late. That's 11,913 out of 834,564. Both late agency count and late policy count are down significantly from the 2023 annual, which reflected 533 agencies and 22,181 policies. As a reminder, agencies have 60 days to file a policy or binder with the stamping office, and per the administrative code, the stamping office generates monthly and then annual late filing report listing any agency that has one or more late policies. Insurance code 981.105 defines the assessments for these late filings, which range between $50 to $200 per late filing, depending on the prior year's late filings and how late the actual policy was. Or the late filing may be directly referred to TDI's enforcement division. As filings are made with the stamping office, we generate the annual report and include the correspondence from TDI about the payment's due date as part of the certified mailer. Additionally, there were 170 agents that were direct to enforcement, and 421 agents had assessments or those fees that I mentioned, totaling $830,000. This is actually down again from the 2023 annual, which had assessments of $1.5 million. As a reminder, any assessment is paid directly to TDI, not the stamping office. We do send these late filing reports out as a certified mailer, and this physical preparation, including printing and stuffing of these certified mailers, is handled by the stamping office, as is the actual cost for the certified mailing. This year, 458 certified mailers took a four-person team, roughly 48 hours of prep time over a two-day period, and the certified mailer cost was roughly $4,400. This cost is included in the stamping office's annual budget. On to insurer analysis. As you may recall or may not recall, the stamping office is required to provide evidence to TDI that an insurer meets the eligibility requirements, as well as to provide an evaluation of each insurance contract and surplus lines insurer. The evidence or recommendation that an insurer meets eligibility requirements is specific to foreign insurers. It means that they're domiciled in the United States, or domestic surplus lines insurers, or to shorten that just a little bit, DSLIs. As a reminder, any alien or non-U.S. insurer reflected on the NAIC quarterly listing is automatically eligible to write business in Texas per the NRRA.
We lost you, Cheyenne.
Okay, can you hear me now?
And we lost you. Your laptop, yeah, there you go.
Can you hear me now? Okay.
Hey, Jeff, could you do me a favor and let us know if your microphone is working? Trying to figure out if that's a problem on our end or
mine's working, and I was able to hear Cheyenne.
Yeah, that's not working.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Yes. Hi, Jeff. Can
so Ariel, I see your. I can hear you. Are you saying you can hear Cheyenne, or you can hear the people in the room? Feel free to unmute yourself if you'd like.
Oh, man. Yeah, we can hear Cheyenne. I think everyone attending can hear her.
Let's take a five-minute break and try and figure out what is going on with our system. What I suggest is just get out and get back in. Let's see if it works.
Yep.
Well, let's take five.
10:09.
Okay. Bathroom break.
10:09.
Sorry, Cheyenne. We'll be right back.
happen, so you might have to physically run.
No, I think it's still recording. Going still.
Can you mute, please?
Yeah, could you speak again? Let's see if we...
Can you hear me now?
Oh, yes. There you go.
Yeah, very good. How about you, Jeff? Let's see.
Yeah, I can hear Cheyenne, and I can hear you. This is Jeff.
Thank you. All repaired.
So when did you not catch any of that at all?
The very end.
Probably a couple of
seconds.
Yeah, if you start back over at the insurer analysis recap, we'll be fine.
Okay.
Marissa, that's me. We're still recording.
I guess we're waiting for everyone to return.
Yes.
Yeah, we took five, so they'll be back.
Okay, great. Here. Thanks. Just let me know when everyone's ready. You guys are really tiny on that screen.
Okay, I think we're ready and everything resolved. So Cheyenne, we'll let you pick it back up with your insurer analysis recap.
Thanks so much. And thanks for getting that sorted out so quickly. I was getting a little bit nervous.
Me too.
So on to insurer analysis again, for those of you online that could hear it. As you may recall or may not recall, the stamping office is required to provide evidence to TDI that insurer meets the eligibility requirements, as well as provide an evaluation of each insurance contract and surplus lines insurer. The evidence or recommendation that an insurer meets eligibility requirements is specific to foreign insurers. That means foreign means domiciled inside the United States, or domestic surplus lines insurers, meaning they're domiciled in Texas. We call domestic surplus lines insurers DSLIs, lots of acronyms in this industry. As a reminder, any alien or non-US insurer reflected on the NAIC quarterly listing are automatically eligible to write business in the state of Texas per the NRRA. Year to date, and that's through February of 2025, SLTX has completed 2 new insurer recommendations and 3 are currently in progress. There are 8 new insurers or syndicates that have become eligible, 5 of those being DSLIs or foreign. As a reminder, those would have originated from an SLTX recommendation, and 3 alien, which were shown on the NAIC quarterly listing. There was 1 alien insurer from the quarterly listing that became ineligible. And I also finally want to give a quick update on SMART. We continue working through technical debt, including in updating the platform used for all SMART reports that are created as PDFs, also enhancements and process improvements. Development for policy audit and check work modules remain in progress. However, we are continuing to perform these duties through a manual process until development is complete. Now that we're through the most busy time of the year, the first quarter, we will begin having focus groups or roundtable discussions to get external user feedback about possible process improvements or how best to prioritize features to allow us to base our priority or order released on user needs and not just SLTX theories. As a reminder, SMART is evergreen, meaning that we will make continuous improvements and have SMART be a living application that grows from a technology and feature standpoint. Any questions for me? That concludes my presentation.
Thank you, Ms. Herrera. If there are no other questions or further discussion on this item, I ask Ms. Herrera, do you have a recommendation for the board at this time?
No, ma'am, I do not.
Thank you. And moving on to the next agenda item 6, ITS Director Report and Appropriate Actions. At this time, I ask for Ms. Yolanda Stone, Director of ITS, to present the ITS Director Report.
Good morning. Put the milestones up here just to kind of keep them all in everybody's forefront. This is our milestones, will probably continue to be our milestones for the foreseeable future, but we're still working to make SMART serverless as a serverless system on our end, so we're not having to constantly maintain servers. There's a lot of steps and a lot of processes and a lot of enhancements, a lot of things that have to go into each one of these milestones. That's why I said they will be continued for a while. As Cheyenne talked about SMART, the backlog There will forever probably be a backlog for SMART. As she said, it's evergreen. It's forever going to be growing. We're going to forever enhance it. So we don't get into the particular situation that we were in before. We are, later on this year, we're going to focus on the website refresh. So our sltx.org, we're going to do a website refresh to make it better, to do some enhancements to it, and also to incorporate some SMART aspects into the SLTX website. As SMART enhancements, that's part of the backlog. That's what Cheyenne was talking about, actually getting with some of the outside all of our outside users to see, you know, what do they need to make SMART better or easier for them to use. The SMART connector is a part that we have in place. It's continuously getting updated here and there as needed. And then we do constantly do process improvements to our internal IT systems as needed. So what's going on for our staff updates? I will say, I think, yes, we have the best development team I believe that we could get. Our developers are awesome, and I appreciate everything that they do for us. They are constantly staying on top of things, staying educating themselves with the resources that they have available. So I am extremely proud and amazed at the team all the time. As far as our IT updates, we continue to do infrastructure updates. Currently, right now, we are going to do some enhancement to our domain controllers. The plan is to get rid of them at the end of 2026, but to keep them updated and on par with all the changes that's been going on, we are testing out upgrades. So we have one domain controller in place, which is basically controls access to our servers, access to outside resources. It controls what comes in and what goes out of the of our network. We have been looking at automatic renewals for our security certificates. Google and Apple have gotten together to determine that a year your security certificates are locks that are on your website. So basically, you make sure website secure. And it's basically secured with encryption coding. But Google and Apple have gotten together saying a year is too long to have your certificates or to have your website encrypted. So we're just going to roll it back and go to every 47 days. We have a bunch of servers. We have a bunch of things in our network that actually use those certificates. So instead of everybody spending hours out of their day making sure we upgrade every single server and hitting every single thing, we're looking at different systems to make them all automated. This is a thing now. A lot of businesses are going towards using them as an automated service. Nobody wants to renew certificates every 47 days. That is a little bit extreme. That is a lot of time out of everybody's schedule to make sure that you're hitting every server to renew certificates. And the certificates are important. If you don't have a certificate, I don't know if y'all ever run across some websites you go in, it'll tell you with this big X on the screen, your website is not secure, you sure you want to enter? And because the amount of data that we get in and out from different people, we want to make sure that we're staying on top of that. So that's something that we're working on, hopefully to get it in place by May, which is when our current certificate is set to renew. I've been testing out passwordless system. I think I am the only one that's using it right now. I have not rolled it out to anybody else. I'm not punishing anybody else for now. Everybody's used to what we're doing, so I kind of let them go right now. It is not that bad, but you know, change is not always accepted very nicely, especially when it comes to IT stuff. So I'm testing it out before we roll it out to a couple different more people to do implementation across network-wide. However, it is going to be a requirement with Microsoft as well as AWS and some of the other platforms at the end of the year. So we're trying to make sure that that's rolled out before we have to do it and we're forced to do it. We continue to monitor vulnerabilities, scans, logs, and look at anomalies every single day. That is part of what we do. I have work to do renewal pricing with Adobe, our Atlassian products, and Microsoft. Like Donna said, some of those things they came in a little bit later than as expected.
but we are getting those renewed. And then at the beginning of the year, I work with Microsoft to get a grant for some upcoming projects that we have. We did receive a 5 to 6 month grant of a dedicated four team of Microsoft engineers to work with us to get some of the work done that we want to get done in Azure. So that was a big thing. And then on the other side, it's just, this is the average of weekly, monthly stats for emails, inbound, outbound emails, and stats from our website. I just thought maybe everybody wanted to see how much traffic we get on a kind of a summary basis, but that's what's up there. Any questions?
Questions for Mrs. Stone? Mrs. Stone, do you have a recommendation for the board at this time?
Ma'am, I do.
Thank you. Agenda item 7, Executive Director Report and Appropriate Action. I open the floor to Mr. Greg Brandon, Executive Director, to present.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you so much for being here. First thing we're going to do, I'm going to do two things. I'm going to give you an update on the business, but we'll do that after we go through the annual report. So the first thing we're going to do is go through the annual report. We're going to review it real quick. I'm not going to read the entire thing to you, but I will try and point out to each kind of various parts of it, what goes into it and why we're putting it in the annual report. And it's also important to understand that it is a team effort that is led by Marissa. The content is put together by a team of people, is verified by another team of people, and Marissa herds every cat in the business and all of the artwork associated with it. So this is, for lack of a better way to say it, this is Marissa's baby, and she's done a fantastic job on it. So if you go to the first page really kind of explains why we do this particular document. Over on the annual report requirements, you can see this report is made pursuant to the Stamping Office Plan of Operation. If you're a fan of writing down each section, it is section 3C6F. And it requires that an annual summary of operations containing information on transactions, conditions, operations, and investments during the preceding year be made to the Deputy Commissioner of the Financial Regulation Division or the Deputy Commissioner's designee. And I will tell you, if you have not had the opportunity to meet the deputy commissioner, she is fantastic to work with. She's a big supporter of this organization, and she loves data. So this document is one of her faves that we provide to her. So that's kind of explains everything, really, is we send this to Ms. Walker, and she devours it. She really does it. Okay, so on these first couple of pages really are all different views of the transactions recorded in 2024. So you can see, probably not a surprise to anybody, that liability programs and property programs are the bulk of what came through on a premium basis. And that's just all premium aggregated by coverage and by line of business. The next slide is transaction. It's a little bit weird. This data ties to a heat map that we will have on a different page, but you can see up at the top, it's for property lines of business and the percentage of premium written by surplus lines insurers with an admitted affiliate. I'll get to the section of the plan that requires this in just a second. On the next page, this kind of integrates all into the transactions. It is premium and item count. So you can see the bottom there has the item count. Never seen anything like that before from an item count basis. 1.3 million items coming through the door is a whole lot of data. And then on the next slide is our last transactions page, and it is very granular compliance metrics. So section 3D, so you can see it on the bottom. If you go to the bottom, the very small print of plan of operations, section 3D1E6. Requires all of this. So the heat map is something that is actually a bit of a challenge to put together and make it look pretty. It shows you everything, all the policy premium for property coverages underwritten by surplus lines insurers with an admitted affiliate. And you can see it was $4.6 billion and was 10.9% attributed to extended coverage. And probably no surprise, the highest premium is Harris County. On the next page, not a direct requirement, but is a great reflection of the business and our customer base. The top 10 insurers, you won't find in the plan of operation that it says list in the annual report 10 insurers and brokers. But we do this as kind of a to complement the larger participants and kind of demonstrates the customer base that this organization handles on a year-to-year basis. On the next page, this is conditions is also undefined in the plan. So we use that to speak to our annual TWIA report that we provide to the Texas Windstorm Insurance Association. And then finally, the finances, that the financials, the investments, that's a summary of all the things that you just heard from Donna and Alex is really a summarized form of that so that Deputy Commissioner Walker can see where we're at financially. And then the back page is a picture of my brain. So kudos to the entire team, in particular Marissa, for putting this together. I think it looks great, visually very beautiful, but also contains all the data that is required in the operation to be provided to Deputy Commissioner Walker. That's all I have for this, for the plan of operation. So
perfect. Are there any questions on the annual report? Mr. Brandon, do you have a recommendation for a board motion at this time?
Yes, I do. I recommend that the board approve the annual report as presented and submit to TDI in accordance with Section 2C5C of the Standing Office Plan of Operation.
Do I hear a motion for the board to approve the annual report as presented and submit to TDI in accordance with Section 2C5C of the Stamping Office Plan of Operation?
So moved, Jeff Klein. Oops, sorry.
Have a second?
Jim Bishop, second.
If there's no further discussion, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? No. Ayes have it, and the motion passes. Mr. Brandon, would you please continue with the company?
So this slide is our company overview. I always like to start with the organization. No changes here. I talked to you a little bit about this yesterday, so I'll try to go quickly. Four pillars of operation. We have operations is the largest employer of the organization, and then we have a smaller but still significant IT group. And then we also have Donna as the director of finance and Denise as the director of HR. And you can see we have Ronnie Ford there, our newest employee is there. So I just want to point out that and make it official for anyone that's listening that Donna Ogg is retiring. So this is her last board meeting. She'll be here through the beginning of June, but she has elected to retire. And we are super proud of her for having the ability to do that. And frankly, I'm going to say I'm super proud of this organization for making it such a challenging decision for her. I love that she loves this organization and has enough pride in her job and the services that she provides to us and to you that it was a hard decision, right? You want to be an employer of choice, and I'm super proud to be that organization that made it at least somewhat hard for Donna to decide to retire. And I also want to welcome Ronnie, formally, just welcome to the team, and thanks for jumping in, basically at my request. So on the next slide, I know we talked about this yesterday in the orientation, so I won't belabor it too much, but surplus lines, really, I think what this demonstrates is that surplus lines has become an integral part of the insurance puzzle in the state of Texas. We've got $16.6 billion premium written in 2024, and as you can see, that is a record. We've never seen anything like that in the history of this company. On the next slide, this is the historical filings. So you can see the orange bar is the policies, over 830,000 policies, and then a total of 1.3 million items. I'm going to make a bold statement that my good friend Cheyenne and my statistician down there would never make. Christian, I don't have any math to back this up, and I don't have any data to back this up. I will tell you, it cannot possibly be coincidence that we had record filings last year and record low late filings. I will boldly tell you the reason that is because Smart System is so efficient and easier to use than the Heritage system that it had to create efficiencies at the agency and broker level because we've never seen numbers as low. I shouldn't say never, right? We never seen numbers this high that are also coordinated with late filings this low. And I think, and I will boldly say, that is because Smart is so good at what it does. And that is entirely dependent on the people that run it and develop it. So I'm super proud of this organization. And Cheyenne is probably going to hang up any minute now because she's going to be mad at me for saying that. But I had to point it out. Okay, on the next slide, this is a fun slide that everybody likes to see too. And I did talk about it yesterday as well, so I'm not going to belabor it too much, but it maybe does measure a little bit of the affordability of the surplus lines, demonstrating that almost 65% of all the policies that were sold last year were $5,000 in premium or less. This is a fun one. Brokers in particular really like this slide, and Christian puts this together, and it's just kind of delightful information that everybody likes. It's very relatable when you can see what the majority of the policies are sold for. On the next slide, you see the stamping office. Like I told you, it is not a competition, but there is a leaderboard. You can see Texas is, depending on what you're measuring, either premium or item count, Texas is third or second, kind of depends on the metric of your choosing. But really, I think what this emphasizes is that Texas is a major market presence in the surplus lines world. And the surplus lines market in Texas is dependent on the stamping office to digest all the material that's going here, right? We don't ever want to be an impediment to the market. So I'm super proud of the organization to be able to point at something like this and say, Texas is a market maker and a market mover, and we are a part of that. And those market makers and market movers depend on us to do our job correctly at all times. So super proud of that. All right, that was the historical stuff. Now we'll get into 2025. So far, year to date, almost $6 billion in premium written in the first 2 months. So just to orient everybody, the blue line above January and February is 2025 data. And then all of the bar charts below it are the previous 4 years before that. So as you can see, both January and February were records. So the highest in the last 5 years, and frankly, the highest January and February ever premium reported. And spoiler alert, March will be above the numbers as well. So March is in the next, it's the 28th. So we've got several days. I can't imagine that we're going to lose momentum, but if all things hold, March will also be a record for that month of any year. Moving on to the next one, the year-to-date item count is almost $5,000. And you can see very similar chart-wise. Probably worth pointing out that the y-axis does not start at zero on this. It's a little too granular of data to see movement. It's a little bit lower, but worth pointing out that the total item count was higher than ever for both January and February as well. So big months, super proud of the organization to be able to digest whatever is thrown at us, no matter what month or what else we have going on. As you heard Cheyenne say, the first quarter is a super busy time for us. And it's also a super busy time for the market. So we're super proud to be able to do all the things that we do without anyone in the organization. Then my final slide is policy count, and I apologize, that says 2024, it should say 2025. The year-to-date number is 130,000, that's policies only. Both of those months, you can see 63,000 and almost 67,000, also records for the month. Big months. So the year has really kind of started off with a bang for us. We've had a lot of things submitted to us and a lot of data to digest. So again, kudos to our organization being able to handle that. And it really kind of shows the integration of the organization. We really work well together. We are firing on all cylinders, and I am super proud of our ability to do that across the board. And that completes my presentation. Anybody have any questions?
Great. Questions from Mr. Brandon? Mr. Brandon, do you have a recommendation for the board at this time?
I do not.
Moving to the next agenda item, agenda 8, election of officers. We have three officer positions to elect, chair, vice chair, and secretary. We'll handle these separately to record the nominations and to vote on the nominees for each position. If there are more than one nominee for any of the other officer positions, the nominee with the most votes will be elected to the respective position. Officer terms are for 1 year and will commence upon election. Secretary, with the assistance of the stamping office staff, the secretary must keep full minutes of the proceedings of the board and perform other duties customary to the office assigned by the chair. Do I have any nominees for the office of secretary? Don't make me have to volunteer you. Can I say something here? If anybody's interested in the, the staff, she handles it and it's so wonderful. And she and I just kind of go back and forth with it and take care of it. So you're really not sitting here typing up the notes. It's recorded. That goes into a recording. And you sign off on it. You read it.
Volunteer.
Okay. Thank you, Mrs. Bennett. Do we have any other nominations? Okay. Call for a vote for all in favor of Ms. Leah Bennett. Please raise your hand.
Affirmative.
Okay. Let the record reflect that all board members voted in favor of electing Leah Bennett. And having the most votes is this. We do elect Leah Bennett is elected as secretary of the Stamping Office Board of Directors. Thank you for stepping up there. Vice chair. The vice chair performs all duties of the chair during the absence of the chair. Do I have any nominees for the office of the vice chair?
This is Jeff. I would be pleased for continuity purposes to put my name in nomination.
Okay. Do I have any other nominees? Okay. All in favor of Mr. Jeff Klein, please raise your hand.
Affirmative.
Let the record reflect that all board members voted in favor of electing Mr. Jeff Klein. And having the majority vote, he is elected as vice chair of the Stamping Office Board of Directors. Thank you. The chair will preside at all meetings and perform all duties customary to the office, including the appointment of committees. The chair is an ex officio member of all committees and signs certain contracts as established in board policies. Do I have a nominee for the chair? I'm happy to volunteer for the chair position here. Now you have to vote for me. In favor of Leslie Lilgenberg, please raise your hand.
Affirmative.
Yeah. Okay. Let the record reflect that majority board members voted in favor of electing Leslie Lilgenberg. And we announced that Leslie Lilgenberg is elected as chair of the Stamping Office Board of Directors. And I'm proud to announce our new officers of the Board of Directors of the Surplus Line Stamping Office of Texas 4. That would be 2025, right, Greg? Chair Leslie Lilgenberg, Vice Chair Klein, and Secretary Leah Bennett. Thank you. Congratulations to everyone. And with that, I'll turn the floor over to our newly elected chair. To provide over the remainder of the meeting. So I'm all that's between you and the airplane right now. The next agenda item is the appointment of committee members. Under Section 2C9A of the Stamping Office Plan of Operation, the chair's duties include the appointment of committees. Each committee is governed by a charter which provides for the membership, terms of the members, and that the board chair will serve as an ex officio member and may appoint the chair of each committee. So agenda item number 10 is committee appointments. First off, we have our finance and audit committee. This makes up three members. So you need three members to volunteer to be on this committee. Two have a one-year term and one member has a two-year term. The chair member, Jason Cables, has indicated his desire to remain as participation on this committee.
Greg, I'm assuming he's fine with still being the chair.
He's yes. Okay. Yeah, and he would also check the box for the 2-year commitment since he was. Okay.
All right. So do I have two other members that would like to serve on the Finance and Audit Committee?
I would like to remain on it.
Okay.
Paul would also like to remain on it.
And that was Mr. Nick Lawrence, for the record, that also volunteered to be on that committee. Next, we have Board Training Committee. This is 3 members, 2 of 1-year term and 1 member as a 2-year term. I'll be the past chair on this committee. So do I have somebody volunteer to be the chair of this committee?
I'm happy to chair.
Okay. Mr. Jim Bishop is chair. Do I have 2 other members that would serve on this committee?
Well, I'm sir.
We have such an awesome staff that honestly, you guys handle so much. It's awesome. It's wonderful. I need another member for this committee. For the board training. Yes, I need one more person that would be interested in this. It's you, Jason and I, right? Greg, do I move forward?
Nobody wants to volunteer. You have the authority to designate.
Hey. It's so much fun. Okay, who made me upset last night? No, I'm just kidding.
If you want, it might be easier to... So we have really 3-person committees, right, and 9 people. So 3 people. We shouldn't have anybody overlapping and duplicating. So if you want, you can move on to the next one, and then... Whoever doesn't volunteer for that one gets pigeonholed into this.
Okay, then we have Plan of Operation Committee, which is 3 members, all with 1-year terms. Mr. Jeff Klein has indicated his desire to maintain his participation on this committee. Mr. Klein, are you willing to chair this committee?
I'm willing, but I would defer to anybody else, including any of the new members, if they'd like to chair.
So is there anyone that would like to chair this committee and then Mr. Klein would remain on as a member?
Hearing none, I'll agree to chair it then.
Okay. Thank you, Jeff. Need 2 more members for this committee.
Volunteer for the committee.
Good, because you were going to be called. Let's see. I've got just about every board member. We're going to have some overlap.
If it's going to be overlap, I'll volunteer.
Okay.
I mean, I'm happy to if it's...
Still Pete. I'm about to get Pete. I was... Yes. Pete, which committee are you most interested in being on?
Operations.
Okay. So we've got Pete Harrison on Operations.
Plan of Operation?
Yes. So I've got Jeff as chair, Ryan, and Pete on that committee. And then I've got Ezekiel and Nick on Finance. And then I've got Board Training Committee, which is Jim Bishop and Leah Bennett.
I guess there will be one overlap. Since you are an ex officio of all, you really don't need to be a member. So.
Yeah. I'm off that committee, right?
Okay. Someone will need to overlap with 2 committees.
This is Jeff. I'll be on the training committee if you need a third.
Okay. It's really, honestly, it's not. I mean, Marissa and Denise, these guys all bring stuff together, so it's great. Easy for you. Everybody panics when they have to volunteer, I think. Okay, so are we good? We've got everyone documented there. All right. If there is no other business before the board, do I hear a motion to adjourn the meeting?
You can all follow makes the motion.
Okay. Second?
Leah Bennett, a second.
Leah Bennett, seconds. Everybody jumped on those motions. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed that would like to stay here? No. Okay. The ayes have it. This meeting is adjourned at 10:43 on March 28th, 2025.
Please save me some chips.
Okay.
Don't be upset, Jeff. It's barbecue.
Oh, I'm flying out.
Have safe travels, Jeff.
No. Bye.
Thanks. Good to see everybody.
You too, Jeff.
Thank you.
Some signs.